Like, we're small enough that we should, we're big enough to be able to get things done, and we're small enough to get things done. There's like a right size. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we're right size, that we should be able to support our students. And I tell my principals all the time, like, every yes is a no, because we have limited funds and we have limited resources. We have limited teachers' bodies. We have limited space in this building we're in right now. So what we have to do is prioritize, and whatever mm-hmm. we're saying yes to, it might require a no somewhere else, but let's pick a no from somewhere way down the list, you know, and we'll knock those things off that are less impactful, and let's do the things that we know are going to work for kids.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Dr. Leslie Sparacello. She is the superintendent at Cedars International Academy, and that is in Austin, Texas. Leslie, thank you so much for being here today.
Great. Happy to be here.
So tell us what's going on at Cedars.
Well, we are growing. We've added about 100 students in the last year.
Wow.
And so much so that we're getting ready to buy a new building and maybe move in July. We currently have two campuses, one pre-K to 8, one 9 to 12, and we're going to combine into a bigger campus to be more accessible to families. And so we're excited about that.
Wow. So how many students do you have right now?
We have about 560 right now.
Oh, you're not small. That's not a little school.
To me, it feels that way because I've been in much larger systems.
Oh, well, if you go to Austin ISD, of course, that's a massive school district. But still, for a charter school, that's not tiny. You guys are doing awesome. And you have K-12. That's fantastic.
Yeah, but we added three-year-olds this year. So that's
So you have pre-K. Yes. Very cool.
I'm with the babies for sure.
Yeah. Love those little ones. They just tug at your heartstrings. They do.
They make me smile.
Yeah. So, and you said you're adding 100, and at 500, that's 20%. That's amazing growth.
Yeah, we really are there. We're a project-based learning district. So we're a little bit different than some of the other schools around us, a little less traditional. And so that's enticing to some families. And then us being Cedars International, we have lots of different nationalities here, different students from different places. And so it's quite the diverse group of kiddos.
Wow. That's fantastic. So a little bit of history. How long has it been there? Tell us a little bit about how it became to be.
So we were started by a Catholic priest with the Maronite Rite, which is the Lebanese Catholic Church. And he was here in Austin and feeling like there were a lot of migrant families that the traditional ISDs were not serving well. So he started with just a few students in the parish hall of his church 25 years ago. And we just completed and got authorized again in April of this year. After 25 years, for another 25 years. And like I said, we're going to move into a new building so that we can keep growing and for the next 25 years.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you have to, so the charter has to be renewed every 25 years. Is that how it works?
No, it actually has to be renewed every 10. Once you become a charter in Texas, you're chartered for 5 years. And then after that first five, you apply again.
Oh, okay.
And then it's renewed every 10 years. So every 10 years, we have to go through the process. So unlike traditional schools, like, we could be closed if we're not doing right by our children. So we were very happy to be renewed for another 10 years.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really, really, it's important. I think, you know, I think that there are needs for all different kinds of schools. I've talked to charter schools and virtual schools, and obviously little tiny rural schools and public schools that are massive. And I think that there's a place for every one of them, you know, really.
Yeah, for sure. I've been in traditional, 31 years in traditional ISDs, 5 years in charters, and I spent about 7 or 8 years in Catholic schools as a Catholic school principal. So pretty much done them all. And they're great. All of them are great.
Like, yeah. You know, and that's something that that's something that you have. I want to touch on that because I really loved hearing from our intro call about your philosophy and how you grow leaders. So can we dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I've just always been sort of blessed to be mentored by somebody else, you know, above me who taught me the importance of next man up, right? Like you want to have continuity. And I see that happen a lot in school districts where you have these dips because they change superintendent or the campus changed principals or, you know, lost a group of teachers. And so I was just having this conversation with my principals yesterday in our principal meeting that, like, who's your second? Who's your third? Like, in every important position you have on campus, who do you have that could replace that person who's doing that job now so that we never have a lull in continuity, that we're always, because the ones who suffer are the students whenever we don't do that. So that's where my heart and my passion is. And I've just discovered that leaders are a way to get to them and make sure that they get what they need. So I believe in having a bench, if you will, if you want to make a sporting analogy, that you have a bench and you already know kind of who could take it. And they may not. You know, I think some leaders are afraid to prep people because it's like, then they'll leave me. They'll go find another job.
I was going to ask you that's I'm glad you're answering that question.
Is greener thing. And that does happen without a doubt. I mean, one of my absolute favorite mentors was like, look, I'm coaching you up. And, you know, if you leave, you leave. But, you know, and I actually stayed there for 15 years with that group of people because the culture was so much of that philosophy, that same philosophy that I shared. So, you know, you have to wish others well if they move on. But if you have a deep bench, you know, that's maybe two or three people deep, then you just move on to the next person. Like, everybody knows that we're growing people around here. Nobody's just here working. Like, everybody's trying to take my seat. If you're trying to take my seat, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you, one of the things, being an entrepreneur, I never thought I'd call myself that, but here I am. You know, even though I've been a speech therapist for 31 years, starting a business, you're an entrepreneur, and that is a bucket that you get put into. And I am a woman who started that. So I'm also a female bucket leader, you know, or entrepreneur, whatever you want to call it. But I'll tell you, when you start a business and you're the one who's doing it, and no matter what, it's like I always use the analogy of a juggler spinning plates. And, you know, every single the plate that wobbles is the one that gets the most attention, you know, because that's the one that's having the problem. Well, we started in 2018, and in January of 2021, I got COVID, and I didn't take care of myself because I was a business owner and an entrepreneur and all of those things, and I don't stop anyway. And I got COVID pneumonia, and I was sick. I mean, sicker that's the sickest I think I've ever been in my entire life. And I've had other illnesses, but oh, that was awful. And it was 2 weeks. I mean, I probably should have been in the hospital, but they just weren't admitting people. They were just like, you're going to have to go through the course and blah, blah, blah. And I knew enough about, I worked also in the medical field for part of my career. So I knew enough. And my mom was an RN and all of those things. But so it's not like I didn't have any knowledge, but the company. And that's when I knew that Lighthouse was going to be okay, because Lighthouse continued, even though I was literally out of the picture. Like, for 2 weeks, I was out of the picture. And it was and we're a family business. So my daughter was like, everybody was like, well, how's your mom today? Well, how's your mom today? And she's like, haven't even heard from her. Don't know. She's still, if I haven't heard from her, she's not doing well, right? Yeah, moving on. And they did. And everybody, you know, again, you talk about having people in the right seats and having people that they're mentoring and making sure that you have someone behind you. And I've done that from day one with my daughter, because she's going to take this seat when I retire, you know. And so there's always, and we have that in every single department. There's a person that is being groomed and knowledge and understands the systems and all of that. And we have a weekly director's meeting. And if the director cannot be there, there's somebody else that can step in. So I love that. It's exactly what you're talking about. So very cool.
And even when you bring somebody in with experience, there's just a learning curve for that organization. I felt like this is my third year here as superintendent. And it's the first year that I'm like, okay, I feel pretty solid. Like nothing, and now there's still going to be things that come at me sideways. I know that. I'm fooling myself if I think there won't. But, you know, because the Texas legislature will make sure that that happens. But, you know, I can say honestly that, you know, there was a big learning curve for me, even though I felt comfortable in the job. I still was, there was just things about the organization and how things were run. And, you know, I didn't want to step on somebody's toes. And at the same time, wasn't quite sure if that was the best way to be doing things, you know? Mm-hmm. So, so yeah, there's just definitely something to be said for having a lineup of people that can step in and, you know, you just never know where life's going to take you. Either I don't play the lottery very often, but it could happen. I don't step out in front of buses very often, but it could happen. Right. You know, so I try to be, you know, prepared.
Yeah. So let's talk about the challenges then. What do you consider to be the biggest challenges for you? I think there's definitely like a theme that I'm seeing of issues mm-hmm. that people are having. But what are your biggest challenges right now?
Finances are definitely a big challenge in schools. You know, students are coming with more and more needs. And, mm-hmm. You know, addressing those needs comes at a cost, obviously. And then that kind of ties into personnel, like finding really qualified personnel who want to work in a school and stay in a school. And, you know, so those are the two of the biggest challenges, the finances and then just finding qualified personnel.
So one of the other things that that we had talked a little bit about was implementing co-teaching models in schools. So can you give us a little bit of how you implement that and what that looks like for your district and what are the kind of some of the outcomes that you see from that?
Sure. This will actually be the fourth school district that I have implemented co-teach in. And it, to me, is just absolutely one of the most effective teaching models I've ever seen. Now, obviously, you're going to get a better student-teacher ratio if you've got two teachers in the classroom.
Oh, of course, right?
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it comes with some challenges, too, but, you know, you can really get into the differentiation. Co-teach has different models within it, you know, so it can be one teach and one assist, or it can be we split the class and you're teaching half and I'm teaching half and we've grouped them, you know, either homogeneously or heterogeneously or whatever. We might have three groups going and one's independent and we're rotating through stations. There's just so many different ways to really personalize it for your student needs. And that's probably one of, I think, teachers' biggest complaints is, oh my goodness, you filled my class with all these kids. They're all at different levels. You know, mm-hmm. how am I supposed to address all of these different levels? Here in Texas, we have the added addition of language that can also be another challenge for students to get their learning. And so co-teach has just been, I've done it with pure language classes, like in a bilingual class where it wasn't necessarily a SPED class, but it was a heavily bilingual class or a mixed class with a lot of students who had language like an ESL class that had language barriers. And so we would have two teachers so that we could differentiate. And what I found over time in all four places is that if you do it right, your special needs children will not only excel, mm-hmm. but in some cases, they actually surpass regular ed students because it's not that they're not bright enough. They just have challenges to get to that space. You know, I know we mm-hmm. were talking about wearing glasses, like, know, if we're reading, like if you put me next to somebody who's 20 years old and you ask us both to read, well, without my glasses, they're definitely going to be able to read and I'm going to look like I have no idea what I'm doing. but right. you put my glasses on me and I'm reading just as well or better than they are. And that's kind of what I have seen with our special education students, that when they have the tools they need and the time they need and the differentiation, they're absolutely as smart or smarter than any yeah. other student. They just need a different modality.
What if every student could work with a therapist who brings not just credentials, but years of experience and wisdom to the table? At Lighthouse Therapy, most of our therapists have over 16 years of real-world experience. We don't just fill seats. Instead, we find therapists who've seen it all and know how to help. And every new therapist is paired with a mentor to help them guide them every step of the way. Whether through virtual, hybrid, or in-person delivery, your students are getting services that's thoughtful, experienced, and genuinely human. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together to learn more. Yeah, that's fantastic. That is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, it's just a matter of, one thing, ESL. So English as a second language, right? That's what ESL yes. said. I want to make yes. sure that, like, I know we love our acronyms, and I was like,
I
warned you. I was like, I was gonna, at most people that are listening to this probably know what that is, but you know, we always want to make sure that anybody who's listening understands our lingo, right? Yeah.
So, yes.
And certainly in Texas, we have a lot of, you have an international school. So what kind of, how many different languages are you representing in your school? That's kind of an off the cuff question, but I'm just right. curious if you know.
Most of our students speak Spanish. You know, we'll have a few students who come. The Spanishes can be very, very different because, you know, we can have students who come from South American countries. We have a lot of students from South America or Central America who are in areas where there's not a lot of education and there's a dialect of Spanish. Wow. So even though Spanish is the main language, there's a lot of different versions of Spanish. We do have a group of Pakistani students. So we have a little bit of Hindi occasionally and things like that. So not as much as just the Spanish, like I said, but the dialects of it.
Well, sure. And you can certainly get that in the United States of America, y'all. You don't hear yes. y'all anywhere and up north, that's for sure.
This is true. Definitely true.
And as somebody who's lived, I grew up in the Midwest. I lived in New York. I've lived in Pennsylvania. I've lived in Ohio. I've lived down here in Texas. A Pepsi, a Coke, you know, a soda, a pop, you know.
Yes, yes.
All the same. They're all the same thing, but they're not. And, you know, understanding that dialect it's huge. It can really change. You're down south and you ask for a Coke and they're like, what kind, right? What kind yes. of Coke do you want, right?
Exactly.
No, I want a Coke, right? Whereas you ask for a Coke in New York, you're going to get a Coke and that's all mm-hmm. you're going to get, right? So,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Whereas as it's so funny too, because if you'd have said soda to me when I was growing up in Nebraska, where I grew up, I was like, I would have been like, well, you want like a fountain? What do you know? It was a pop. We drank pop. We didn't drink soda. So it's really interesting. And that's just one little tiny example, right?
Yes. But yes.
It's interesting and understanding those dialects and having people that understand them. It's probably a big critical part of what you guys do.
Absolutely. And then we'll get students who may have like a oral language, but really, you know, have made it into, you know, relatively deep into elementary school with not a lot of written language and definitely not written English. So
yeah.
Anywhere that we can, you know, dual support those students in both their language and their academics in other areas, then we want to try to do that.
Yeah. That's fantastic. It's so important, you know, and that's why, and that's what I've said this many times. It's like part of what Brighter Together does. And the reason we talk about it is because it's like every child is being measured on the same measuring stick. And it's so difficult for schools because you're still teaching that child, but you're being measured and you just, you know, it's that, I don't know. It's frustrating. It's really frustrating to talk about test scores. And, you know, that seems to be the benchmark that you hear all throughout social media and the news and how schools are failing and stuff. Well, when you use a faulty measurement, you know, you're not going to have a straight line, are you? So
we just actually are releasing our test scores in Texas from 2023 this week, because we've been in litigation with the state for 2 years. We still don't have 24 and 25 yet, because we've been in multiple years of litigation over this very thing. Like this measuring stick that you're using is not, and you keep changing it, is not reflecting the work that we're doing with students. I think as a result of some of that litigation, at least in Texas, they're starting to understand that they're going to have to communicate a little bit better and do a better job of that. But I talk to superintendents. I sit in a couple of cohorts because I like to hear not just what's going on in our local area, but, you know, others outside in other states. And the challenges are very, very similar. And it's that it's like there we've got this measuring stick, regardless of which state you're in. And none of us are really sure it's measuring what it's supposed to. And we're doing all the things that we know to do with students. Mm-hmm. But again, funding is limited, and finding good qualified teachers or having the time to really train and retain good quality mm-hmm. teachers, all of those things just play a key impact. And like I said, it's the students who suffer. So the more we can do to get our act together locally, you know, we can blame bigger systems as much as we want. But I definitely, since I've been here for sure, I feel like there's not a lot of excuses. Like, we're small enough that we're big enough to be able to get things done, and we're small enough to get things done. There's like a right size. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we're right size, that we should be able to support our students. And I tell my principals all the time, like, every yes is a no, because we have limited funds. So, and we have limited resources, we have limited teachers' bodies, we have limited space in this building we're in right now. So, what we have to do is prioritize, and whatever mm-hmm. we're saying yes to, it might require a no somewhere else, but let's pick a no from somewhere way down the list, you know, and we'll knock those things off that are less impactful, and let's do the things that we know are going to work for kids, put them at the top of the list, and everything else should fall in line.
Yeah. And, you know, as I was saying that today, I just realized too, you know, they're comparing, I just think about the media and how, because it just, it makes me crazy. It really does. And they're comparing how our test scores are based on how we measure. But when you think about how another country measures their test scores, that is not comparing apples even to apples. Like, they probably are taking all of their special education kids even out of the measurement. And yet we measure all of our kids. And it's just really interesting that it's just, you can't even, they are. I mean, they do it every day. I hear it all the time, and it infuriates me every time I hear it. But yet they're not even looking at the metrics that are being used, or the way that you're comparing our scores to China or Japan or Germany or England, where, pick a country. But when you do that, make sure that you're looking. And that's truly what a journalist is supposed to do. That's what a reporter is supposed to do. And yet I feel like they're not. I really feel like they are not.
Yeah. And fortunately, you know, I mean, feel like I've been in this business for so long, and it's changed so much.
And it keeps changing.
And maybe it's always been political, but definitely, you know, there are people who, I'm sure there are probably senators and government individuals, you know, politicians who've ridden on the backs of educators for a while to try to get a message out there or make a point or get elected, you know, and I just always hope that they will keep the children at the forefront, right? Like, and think about the future. I actually testified in our last sessions this summer for the first time, and you have to wait a long time when you testify for, you know, for them to call you up, and so you hear a lot of testimony, and I just kept thinking, you're hearing the same thing over and over and over again. Like, please listen. Like,
yeah.
When you've got one educator after another coming up and telling you, this is what we need, this is what students need, just please listen to us. We're the ones who are, you know, on the ground, boots on the ground, doing the work. We know what students need. I mean, kids are kids at the end of the day. And and learning hasn't changed that much. I mean, maybe the modality that we do it with, but there's still a process, a cognitive process that has to happen. And you need qualified people and resources to make that happen. That's never going to go away.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And they are our future. The kids of today are our future. They just are. And phew. Yeah. It's, and that's why we're here. That's why we keep doing what we're doing, and we keep fighting the fight, and we keep talking about it, and we keep bringing it up, and we keep telling people. And yeah, absolutely. So Leslie, I have one last question. So if you could, and if you've listened to many of my podcasts, most people go, okay, she's asking the question this time. If you could miraculously fix one thing, and I know we all need more money, so you can't say money because everybody knows money is definitely a barrier. But if you could just miraculously fix one thing in your world that was just fixed and you never had to worry about it again, what would that one thing be?
Oh, my goodness. I think that there would just always be a loving, quality educator in every classroom.
Very good. That is a great answer. Absolutely. We all have that one, don't we? We all have that one person that just made the difference for us in our world. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I don't think there's anybody on the planet that if you ask them, you know, who was your favorite teacher, like they're going to mention over the course of 12, 13, 15 years now, they start at 3, you know?
Yeah.
You spend that much time in classrooms with adults who control your day for 8 hours, like somebody's going to make a difference in your life. And so if I could control that, I never had to rehire or terminate because somebody wasn't doing the right thing with kids in the classroom, that would be amazing.
Yeah, great answer. That's a great answer. So where do people go to find out more information about Cedars International Academy?
They can look us up at CIA.org, and they can come visit us in Austin, Texas, one of my absolute favorite cities. I've lived in several cities in Texas, but this is definitely my favorite. It's the best city maybe in the world.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure, Leslie, to have you on Brighter Together. Keep doing it. Keep it up. You're doing a great job. I love hearing about what you guys are doing.